Welcome to this special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring, a series of discussions to help you think through and implement smarter and more impactful strategies to recruit and develop world-class talent for your organization. And now, here is our series host, Mr. Rick Thiemann.
All right, welcome back to our series, A Strategic View of Hiring. As always, I'm joined by our series lead, Mr. Rick Thiemann. As always, good to be with you, sir.
Absolutely. Good to see you again.
Yeah. So as we continue to progress through our series of conversations on the hiring process, what I'm calling the Thiemann process, I'm beginning to see, as we go deeper into all this content, I'm beginning to see how all these pieces of the puzzle are fitting together. And today we're going to do a deep dive on the world of assessments. And I have come to understand just how crucial they are to this process. So Rick, get us started. An effective utilization of assessments is critical to your hiring process, yes?
Yeah, I believe so. Maybe I'm just prejudiced. But the piece is, when you recognize that behavior is the single biggest predictor of performance, and the common approach that's out there is behavioral-based interviewing, the question is, can we really pick out those kinds of behaviors that wind up as derailers for people, which are more classically referred to as abnormal behavior? Most of your assessments in the market only measure normal behavior. They don't measure abnormal behavior.
Well, I guess where I want to go with today's conversation is there's a lot to these world of assessments, and there's a lot to think about, a lot to talk about. We're going to focus more today on selecting the right assessment or battery of assessments for your organization. In a future conversation, we'll go deeper on some of the interpretive side of this thing. But I guess the biggest question someone should be asking themselves if they utilize assessments in their hiring process is what we're using giving us what we need? And I think that may seem like a simple, obvious question, but I think based on your 30 years of experience, there's a lot of organizations that are using the wrong assessment.
There are so many assessments on the market. It's kind of like the needle in the haystack syndrome, right? What's out there and how do I know that I'm getting a quality assessment? So if you start to think at all the assessments that are out there, and let me just rattle off a few, okay? You've got everything from Hogan to Profiles International to Caliper to Target, Pradco, FiroB, Extended Disc, DISC, Predictive Index, Culture Index, 16PF, CPI, which is the California Personality Inventory, and Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. And I could go on. There's the Caliper, and there's the Colby, and there's the Harrison. I mean, I think that's enough, right? But but there's others, right? But how would you know which is the right one to use? I mean, are they all the same? I mean, are all tests created equal? No, they're not. But how would you know as the layperson how to differentiate one from the other?
Well, what if someone, you mentioned a couple that I think everyone knows about. You mentioned Myers-Briggs, you mentioned DISC. Those are very well known. And I think a lot of people.
And Predictive Index is another one. Those are what I call your commodity items, your off the shelf. The way those are marketed in the industry and how they're marketed and who they're marketed by, they're marketed by the masses. I mean, they're literally.
Are those good enough? Are those the right tools? I mean, if I'm using DISC, should I pat myself on the back and say, all right, I'm in good shape?
So the analogy of that is that there's different kinds of hammers. There's a tack hammer, there's a sledgehammer, there's a roofing hammer, there's a carpenter's hammer, right? And so which is the right hammer for the right job, okay? And it's the same thing with tests. So what's the right test for the role? Well, I can easily bash the DISC because I use the DISC, right? It was what I started with in practice 31 years ago. I started with the DISC and I started with the Wunderlich. Those are my two kind of go-to. I soon realized that they weren't nearly enough, which we'll get into in a little bit. But where I'm going with that is that the DISC is a very simple tool. And what your DISC and Predictive Index, which is another big, I mean, I've looked at this Predictive Index on many occasions. I've taken it. I come out as a captain for those people who know what Predictive Index is. That's my handle, if you will, in Predictive Index. But my point is that you can't take such a sophisticated piece of behavior and capture it into a four-dimensional model, meaning DISC is D-I-S-C, the dominance, influencing, steady, and compliant, right? And if you look at the DISC versus Predictive Index, Predictive Index has the same D-I-S-C, but they label differently. It's an A-B-C-D. So the D of the DISC is the A of the Predictive Index. The I of the DISC is the B of Predictive Index, and so on. But they're simple measures of behavior. Now, there's many ways to measure something that you want to measure. You can use a ruler. You can use a yardstick. You can use a micrometer. You can use a laser. Well, which is going to give you the most accuracy? It's the laser, right? And so when you're taking something as complex as behavior and you're trying to narrow it and skinny it down into a really simple model, like a DISC or predictive index, and even the Berkman is a four-color model as well. They use colors. But you cannot condense behavior into four dimensions. Just behavior is just too complex.
And we're talking about measuring a human being here. We're complex organisms. A four-dimensional test is, I mean, I think part of the problem, and let me make it very clear to those listening, we're not here to impugn the DISC.
No.
It serves an amazing purpose for, but it really wasn't designed as a hiring selection tool, correct?
Well, even in its literature, it tells you it's not designed as a hiring tool. But here's the really funny part, right? In all the predictive index, they tout it heavily as a selection tool. Well, they're very similar in nature in terms of the way they're designed, but we can get into that a little later.
Well, it goes back to the question, am I getting what I need? So
exactly.
You've, upon last count, last time I wrote this figure down, you completed over, I think, 20,000 assessments.
Yeah,
that number's probably higher as we record today.
Yeah.
When an organization, so obviously you conduct these assessments for organizations who will bring you and your team in to help that install that process. If someone says, hey, I need assessments, can you come in and administer the DISC for me? You probably say, whoa. But step back. Before we make a decision on the right right instrument to use, what are we trying to accomplish here? What are we hiring?
What's the application?
Are we looking at foreman in the warehouse, or are we talking about succession plan for the CEO?
But even at that, I wouldn't use the DISC.
Right.
And right. Now, there are people who sell the DISC who would try to sell you that. I won't, because I know it's not a strong enough tool. And so when you think about simple versus sophisticated, right? So first thing you have to understand is that there's a differentiation in the assessment world. There's no J.D. Power and Associates rating or ranking system for assessments. So how would you know what I'm looking for? Well, you can basically categorize them into behavioral-based assessments, psychological-based assessments, and clinical-based assessments. Well, what's the difference? So your behavioral-based assessments are just measuring general behavior, just normal behavior, right? That is your DISC, your predictive index, your Myers-Briggs, your Berkman, your Caliper, your Colby, your Harrison. Those are measuring normal behavior in its very simplest form. And they're good tools. I'm not bashing any of those tools. They're good tools, okay?
But measuring normal behavior, correct?
Correct, okay. Right? They don't measure abnormal behavior. Those are your psychological tools. That's your 16PF, your Watterson Personality Inventory, your Hogan, your CPI, which is a California Personality Inventory, your NEO, your Strong Interest. And there's some others that flutter in there, but those are your core, right?
So let me just clarify. If I'm in a hiring process,
right,
and I'm trying to bring in good talent to my organization to help the organization forward, I would want to know about abnormal behaviors, right? Isn't that the whole point of this process?
It is. But again, most people don't realize that there are different levels of assessments. Some do, some don't, right? But because of the way your behavioral-based assessments are marketed, that's where most of the attention goes when folks in the HR world go to look at an assessment to use for a selection tool. And they want something that's simple and quick and down and dirty and easy and not very costly. Okay, well, you're going to get what you pay for, right?
Well, like any product on the market, there's good, better, and best.
Right. So when you look at the world of assessments, okay, you've got your psychological and your behavioral, psychological, and your clinical. So your MMPI, which is a Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, is a clinical test, and there's others. But you can't use those in a pre-employment setting. You can use them post-employment, like an offer for a drug screen, but they must be administered by a clinical psychologist. Well, now you're really starting to get up there in cost, right? Well, your psychological-based assessments are one step removed from a clinical, but they're a step above, if you will, the behavior. Well, so what's the real difference? Well, your psychological assessments are measuring abnormal behavior as well as normal behavior, meaning they're measuring anxiety, aggression, even narcissism. They're measuring, instability, emotional resilience, and a host of other abnormal behaviors that I think we addressed last time in the last session. Your clinical assessments measure really the wonky stuff, right? And that's your paranoid people and your schizophrenics. But again, it's the clinical test. Well, the value of using a psychologically based test over a behavioral based test is your psychologically based test, and basically all of them, are measuring behavior more broadly and more deeply. What do I mean by that? Take the 16PF, for instance. It measures 16 different dimensions of behavior versus four. Now, and it measures it in a deeper fashion. In other words, in the world of of factor I in DISC language, which is influencing, or factor B in predictive index, which is the social style. The 16PF breaks down that extroverted tendencies in five different subcategories. So we're looking at behavior at a deeper level in a much broader context. Well, because we also measure in your clinical, whether I'm using the Hogan or 16PF or WPI, those are my three favorite in that space of psychological tools, you're measuring another realm called anxiety. Well, one of the things we did several years back was we did a three-year study on the behaviors of substance abuse. And we identified that the preponderant number of people in that substance abuse study, 85%, had three or more of our, what we call our abnormal behavior series. So there are 15 abnormal behaviors that are presented, possibly presented, in 16PF language. But now I'm getting a little bit deep for most people's understanding. But the point I'm trying to make is that there's a level of sophistication in the more sophisticated kinds of tools out there that gives you a better understanding of that individual's potential for derailers.
Well, as I said earlier, in a future episode of this series, we're going to go much deeper into the interpretive side of this thing. I was listening to you on the radio not long ago, and you were telling the story how one of your clients said to you, "Rick, how long have you known this guy?" And you're like, "I've never met him." Well, no, what? You predicted exactly how, I don't remember if it was a he or she, was going to interact with our team. And you're like, "Well, I just read the results of this assessment." I mean, you've obviously created a means and a system to really understand what this organization was looking for, and a good assessment can do that. So yeah,
So the story behind that, just real quick, is that one of my clients was looking at four internal candidates they were considering to run Europe. And so I did the assessments, and I'm in the board meeting with the two owners of the company and a head of HR and head of talent management. And we're sitting there and we're reviewing the test results, talking about these four individual candidates and which one I thought had a higher probability of success versus of the four. And the funny part was that we're in this room for about 2 hours. And the younger brother looks at me and says, "Now you've met these people, right?" I said, "No, sir, never met them." He says, "Well, you've talked to them though, right?" I said, "Never talked to them. I wouldn't know if they came through that door." He said, "You've been telling here for the last 2 hours, you've been telling us all this about these people and their strengths and weaknesses just from reading these test results?" I said, "Yeah." I said, have I missed anything?" He says, "Oh, you've been deadly spot on."
Dead on.
Yeah. So the funny part was that at the end of the meeting, the older brother got up and shook my hand and says, "This has been really fascinating, but I'm not taking your damn test."
Yeah, I understand.
But that's the backdrop to that story.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. Well, it speaks to, if you do this right, you really can get a lot of information. Again, the key question is, am I getting what I need here? So we've talked about, you got to think carefully about the right instrument that you use. But another question that you have to be careful of is this a quality assessment? And there's a lot there too. I mean, there you got to focus on things like validity and reliability. Then you go down a little bit further and you have to think, how am I measuring for distortion? So talk about some of those elements your selection process.
So every test that you'll find is validated. And that's typically the first question. Well, is the test you use validated? They're all validated.
What does validated mean? If it's validated, it is?
That just means it reports what it says and measures what it says it will measure or reports. So if they say, well, we have a 0.8 correlation to our test measuring dominance, right? That's probably what you're going to find is it's going to measure dominance, okay? And all of your assessments on the market, I mean, literally all of them are validated. But the question is by who? Okay. It's like General Motors doing their own crash test.
Right.
Rather than the National Safety Board doing the crash test.
Okay? Got it.
And that's the thing that most people don't understand is that there are a number of assessments on the market, and I'm not going to name them, but there's a number, and if they want to know, you can call and ask me, I'll tell you. But there's a number of assessments on the market that are not validated by an independent research. Okay. There's two, but the main one is the Burroughs Mental Measurements Yearbook. That is the body to which evaluates assessments on the market, and it's all independent. And there are several assessments that are on the market of the ones I've listed that Burroughs has reached out to, and I only know this because of the research I've done, Burroughs has reached out to gain access to their material and their studies, only to be declined. Well, so what are they afraid of? Mm-hmm. Proprietary? I don't think so. Because when you look at their technical manuals, they tout how they've measured it against. Believe it or not, most of the assessments on the market have weighed themselves against the 16PF at some point in time, which is one of my primary tools.
Yeah,
because it's considered the grandfather of psychometric testing.
So what are you after when you're thinking about, is it reliable?
Right. So reliable means is it consistent over time? In other words, if I take the assessment or do the assessment on someone today, and then 2 years down the road, and then 4 years or even 10 years down the road, will the results be similar? Right.
And, oh, okay.
Okay. And I can tell you in the 20 years of doing this, or 30 years now, and the 20,000 I've done, and the number of people I've spent coaching over the years, I've had multiple occasions of reassessing people 2 or 3 or even 10 years later as they've gotten promoted through an organization, because a lot of my clients have been with me almost since inception. I've been able to see that progression and that transition, and I find very little change. Even of the people I've coached, while we might see some behavior modifications of some of the coaching work we've done, we don't see a drastic change in behavior because behavior is pretty constant, right? But behavior is also situational, where we know that scores can fluctuate +/-2.
Well, and there's been some assessments, and we've mentioned them earlier in this conversation, about, depending on when you take it, you might spit out different information. So
yeah, but as a general, that's more true with DISC and predictive index than it is. And another good tool out there that kind of is sets right there in the middle between DISC and predictive index and 16PF and WPI is the Profiles XT. That's not a bad tool. It has 9 dimensions of behavior, and it has 4 of the problem solving. Most of the assessments on the market don't have problem solving attached to it. The Watterson personality inventory does, but it's a short IQ test.
What do you do? Is there a way to protect yourself against that person taking the assessment who's trying to game it?
We call it distortion.
Oh, okay. Right?
So distortion means we know that the test is valid, but do we know that the responses of the individual, are they valid? Meaning, were they honest about how they presented themselves? Did they over-exaggerate? Are they so out of tune with who they are that they don't even realize that how they're showing up on the test results? Okay. The narcissist, so to speak. And using a quality assessment or a more sophisticated assessment, you can pick those behaviors out. So there's certain factors I look at. Of the 16 factors I'm generally kind of eyeing, you know, there's over 4,000 different combinations in those factors to look at the normal versus abnormal behavior piece. And that's the assessment we did that we ran the substance abuse study on in the behaviors of substance abuse. But distortion tells me if a person's gaming the test or if their ego is so far out of whack that they're out of touch with reality. So most of the assessments on the market don't have distortion scales. If they do, they might only have... So Profiles XT in their redesign has 1 distortion scale, but it's really a weak distortion scale. And the predominant assessments, the 2 predominant assessments that I use, they have 3 distortion scales. So I know if they're based on how those scores are aligned, whether or not I can really trust the results of the assessment, okay? In a similar fashion, when you look at predictive index and DISC, and I keep going back to those two because most people know those. I mean, those are kind of the predominant ones in the market. But you can pick up some of that because of the difference between graphs 1, graph 2, and graph 3. You can pick up some of that. But again, it's still only measuring 4 dimensions of behavior.
Well, see, if you're listening and you say, well, they're really hammering the DISC. I mean, part of the reason that there's differences between, say, the 16PF and DISC is content and construct of how these things are actually put together. The DISC is actually a very simple tool. Right. It doesn't take very long to do it.
Right.
Whereas some of these assessments we're talking about here are considerably more complicated and take longer time. I mean, the content and the construct matter here too, yes?
It does. So when you look at content and construct, it's not what a test tells you, it's what a test doesn't tell you. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it's not what a test doesn't tell you, it's what it can't tell you. All right. So what the heck does that mean? All right. So in what a test can tell you but doesn't tell you is, let's take predictive index. Factor A is dominance, okay? In DISC, factor D is dominance, and I forget what the Berkman is. But my point is this. It will tell you if that person has a dominant orientation, but it doesn't tell you if there's any anger behind the dominance. And in reports that are generated, as a general rule, the reports that are generated have what I call soft language, meaning, yeah, it's nice, right? But there's nothing in the language that speaks to the fact that this person could be a challenge across 1 or 2 different domains, right? So when you think of then test construct, it's how is the test constructed? And then what is it measuring and to the depth of what it does measure? So let's take, for example, that I'm trying to measure whether somebody is really, really funny like Robin Williams or tends to be more serious for us older generation who knows who Joe Friday is from Dragnet. It is how do I measure on a scale of 1 to 10 whether a person is a real comedian and a real cut-up or so serious that they really have almost, you wonder sometimes if they have a pulse. Well, you have to ask enough questions to get a barometer. So if I ask 10 different questions about the degree to which I'm serious or not so serious, you know, I want to get that barometer. Well, if I only ask 3 questions, I'm not going to get a good enough read on how serious or how fun-loving you really are by only asking you 3 questions versus 10. Okay, so if I'm measuring 16 items, right, and I'm going to ask an average of 10 questions, that's 160 questions minimum.
Yeah.
Okay, well, your disk has 28 boxes of words, and each box has 4 words in each box. It takes 10 minutes to take. Your predictive index has 96 words on one page, and you flip the page over, you get 96 words on the other. They're all basically constructed in a very similar fashion. So test content and test construct has to do with the length of the test, what I'm measuring, how deeply I'm measuring it. So your simple assessments just don't go deep enough or broad enough to pick up those, what I refer to as the abnormal behaviors, which are typically unproductive in the workforce.
Okay, well,
So we've covered distortion, test content, test construct, simple versus sophisticated. The question becomes is, do most companies who use some type of assessment even know what they're using? Do they know what it's telling them? Does the person who's selling it to them know what they're doing? Can they provide more valued input besides just what the computer report says? And is there any way to have any type of interpretive value to really add value to the product that they're buying?
Well, that's why I mentioned the example of your client thinking you knew these people, because the assessments, the battery of assessments that you used that session gave you a very complete picture.
Yeah. So it might sound like I'm knocking the disc. I'm not, because I've used the disc for 31 years, right? I've almost taken on the predictive index on 2 different occasions because I think there's a model for that tool in the marketplace somewhere. But then you start asking yourself, well, when is enough enough? So I think what I'm trying to help the listeners understand is that your simple behaviors that are behavioral-based are good tools. They're inexpensive. They're easy to use, easy to administer, but they're limited in what they can in their scope, number one. And they're limited really in their position in the company, meaning I use DISC for team building. I use DISC as part of my coaching package. And I use DISC as part of my assessment battery. But I don't use my DISC as a selection tool because it's not broad enough or deep enough. And even if I would have added the predictive index, and I also looked at Profiles XT, which I think is a pretty good tool itself, a little more costly, but nonetheless, it's one of the better ones.
Well, like anything, you get what you pay for.
But that's true. So what I've tried to do is that I want to make sure that if a client asks me, here's what we're using, I can give them a heads up, in my honest opinion, based on all the research I've done, here's where this tool fits, here's where its limitations lie, here's what you need to understand about it, here's where its value lies. And then if that's something you can live with, then that's fine, right? But if I don't know what I'm using and I don't know what it's really providing other than some computer-generated report, that's really not enough. Because when you look at the broader scope, so let's go beyond just selection, okay? I've seen some companies use 3 or 4 different assessments throughout their entire process, okay? And what you need is you need a tool that will help you not only with your assessment process, but your selection process, but with your coaching process, with your succession planning process, with your talent management process, with how you identify your high potentials. You need a tool that will cross all those boundaries. And the disc is not enough to do that. And most of the others aren't as well. But if I only have the disc to sell,
right?
All right, or I only have predictive index to sell, or I only have Myers-Briggs to sell, then guess what I'm going to try to convince you of? That my Myers-Briggs is an end-all be-all. Well, let's take Myers-Briggs, for example. I'm an ENTP, okay? But I was just out in the Rockies for 5 days on horseback by myself. I was an INTP, okay? What does that mean? Well, you see, most of the assessments in the market wind up labeling you with some type of vernacular, like in the predictive index, I'm a captain, right? With the disc, I'm an influencer, right? So all these tests label you. Well, the psychological tests that I use, they don't label you, right? It's just, this is how behavior is wired, okay? And so I get a kick out of these people who are out there trying to convince people to use the disc for selection, or that the predictive index is the end-all be-all, or that the Myers-Briggs is a great coaching tool. It's limited,
yeah.
Right? And until you get into the more sophisticated tests, so if you're using the Hogan, I use the Hogan. Hogan's a good tool. Hogan has its limitations because you have to use three different assessments to get the same thing I can get from my 16 PF. So what I'm basically trying to help my audience understand in this session is be cautious of what you're using, be challenge your practitioner of what they're selling you, learn how to ask questions, see if they understand their test content and test construct and their validation, and see if they can help you understand how to use that test. And if you're using it right in your end, and I'd be happy then to offer anybody who's listening an evaluation of so what you're using, give you some ideas, what you may want to add to that. Because in our next session that we're going to talk about, we're going to get into using a test battery, why I don't just rely on one, why I use a battery of assessments, and how I get into other assessments that measure the cognitive ability, inductive and deductive reasoning, perceptual reasoning, cognitive reasoning, which we didn't even touch today.
Right. Yeah, Rick, I'm really looking forward to that next session, because all this work that we just accomplished in getting the right assessment, the right instruments, the right battery is going to make this next conversation far, far more effective and beneficial to your organization. All right, that's all the time that we have for today. Rick, should anyone have any questions about today's discussion or want to take you up on that offer for evaluating their process, how do they contact you and your team?
Well, one of the things, you know, this whole session that we just had here is all in chapter 6 of the book. So I can send them the chapter itself. I can send them a copy of the book, or they can order the book through Amazon. The book is called Developing World-Class Leaders, The Ultimate Guide to Leadership Development is the name of the book. Like I said, it can be ordered on Amazon, or I'm glad to send a copy. They can also reach me on our website, which is www.theeg.com, or they can call our office at 219-477-6378. And be glad to do a debrief with anybody who has any interest or questions to ask.
As you said, the book is Developing World-Class Leaders, The Ultimate Guide to Leadership Development, and as you said, can be found on places like Amazon. All right. Well, thank you for listening today. We appreciate everyone's time. On behalf of our series host, Rick Thiemann, I am Todd Schneck. That wraps yet another episode in our special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Listening to the special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring. This series is made possible by The Executive Group, linking human capital with strategic intent, building organizational talent, and developing both world-class leaders and Salesforce effectiveness. To learn more, visit The Executive Group online at theeg.com. That's theeg.com.